You ready? You're listening to the Real Pineapple Podcast Network.
Host Hunter here. Hope you're all having a great start to what's this month? March. Oh my god, what is time anymore? I hope you're all having a great one so far. I'm horribly excited to have two guests on the show today. I've got actress, writer, producer. Oh my god, what doesn't she do? Jennifer Levinson, and then I have director. And I'm going to butcher your name. I'm going to try so hard not to. So feel free to yell at me. Almog Abadan Antonir. Did I get that?
Nailed it.
There we go.
10 out of 10.
Boom. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you guys doing today?
Thanks for having us. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we're both very excited. Thanks. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, no problem. Thank you so much for making the time. So, Jennifer, I'm going to start with you because we're talking about your guys' movie Trust today. So in doing a little research, I did see that it was originally a short that you did a couple years ago. So my first question out the box to you is going to be, why take this short and then go ahead and make it into a feature film? What was the process like on that? And like, what was the decision making behind it?
Yeah, so when I initially wrote the short, in the back of my mind, I knew I wanted to make it into a feature. It's obviously hard to execute on that, but that was my intention. It's a proof of concept. I knew I wanted to tell a longer form story about the trials and tribulations of dealing with a loss in a realistic way. And I wanted to leave a message that I have craved in other movies that sort of told similar stories. So I made the short with the team that was very different from the feature. And I learned a lot on making the short. Got very lucky that it got into Tribeca as part of the Now Creators Market. And that started sort of opening up other doors for me to develop it further. And I had a rough feature script that was in the works. And Almog and I were at a bar one day, and he made a joke to me about directing the feature, throwing his hat in the ring, when I was telling him about some of the issues on the short that I experienced. And the next day I sent him the script and was like, cool, you're in, let's do this thing. So I've sort of used the proof of concept and some of the laurels that we got to basically ask everyone I've ever met in my life for money to make the feature. Until I got enough equity investors and put in some of my own money and was able to green light the feature.
Now, okay. So I want to double back to something you just said. What sort of issues were you having on the short?
I think some just creative differences with certain people on the team and certain ways that I personally thought that characters should be. I realized in a short, things I think are more contained. So you sort of have to be a little more on the nose with who these characters are. But I think they were missing some of the nuances that I would have wanted in a longer form version. So Almog really helped me develop each character a little bit more. Like my character, for example, in the short was a little more grungy and like down on her life. But I wanted the feature to show that she was doing just fine until her mother died. And that's sort of what transitions her into a darker headspace. So sort of creative differences with my own self and with certain people on the team. I knew it was important for me to trust the director I worked with, and Almog and I worked on the developing the script ad nauseum to a point where once we were on set, I knew I could just wipe my hands and let him do his job and not feel like I was a backseat director. So that was really important to me too.
Now, was that something on the short that you didn't feel was the case? Did you feel that kind of that like uncertainty of like, is this going to come together the way I want? Like,
I think so. And obviously on a short, you are tighter on the budget and on a feature, we had more room to sort of develop things. So I was also finding my own voice as a creative producer, and maybe on the short where I didn't feel as strong in my own self to be able to stand up for certain choices I wanted. On the feature, I was very clear about things that I absolutely felt were necessary to keep in and things that I was comfortable relinquishing control over. So I think it was more about me discovering how actively involved I was comfortable being and how to execute some control in a healthy way.
Fair. I as someone who likes to control everything, I feel that to my core. So I sympathize, but props to you for being able to do that. Almog, I'm gonna throw it to you here real quick, sir. So I was doing in doing a little research, I went ahead and I discovered Almost Cool, and I went ahead and I watched like 7 or 8 of the shorts. The ones I definitely ended up binging were Wiener versus Brain, which the Snapchat episode in particular I thought was incredibly hilarious.
Thank you.
I did notice though that you did a couple of shorts during lockdown as well, and I guess I'll ask both of you about this. I'll start with you, Almog. I know for myself, just dealing with the emotional and like mental toll of COVID and lockdown and everything, it was hard to find myself. Kind of hard to get in that headspace to create, but the stuff that I was creating, I found was some of my best stuff once I can, you know, had the distance to could look back on it. Kind of talk to me about the process of running, you know, doing Almost Cool through lockdown and kind of what you discovered about yourself as an artist.
That is a very interesting question. And I'm glad you got to binge some of the Almost Cool stuff, but, it was definitely, you know, by that point we had created less frequently on the channel, but when it was lockdown, I think everyone was in creative deficit and just wanted to make stuff, and me and like three of my really good friends, you know, that together we started the channel like way back in the day in college, we'd all been like wanting to do something, and then because it's, you know, not safe to be out and, you know, have a whole big crew, we're like, what do we make, especially for those concepts that have the relatability factor? What do we do now that's relatable? So now that everyone's locked down, what do we do that everyone, you know, a lot of people can relate to, but then also we can make safely? So it's literally just the four of us. So before, you know, we would have a full-on crew, like we would have a sound person, a camera person, and here it was like the only way to do it is if it's literally just the four of us. So if we're not going to have a director of photography, it's me filming. And that was part of it, was me kind of getting back to the roots, the more of the DIY, you know, for YouTube, which that's kind of how we did, you know, back at Chapman, back in college. So this was like kind of coming back to that, which was really, creatively liberating, you know. It seemed like being confined, it was actually allowed us to be more creative in that way. So it was really just fun to get back into filming stuff. I know all of us wanted to just make something.
For you creatively coming out of lockdown, what was the biggest, what was your biggest like lesson takeaway?
Coming out of lockdown, you know, I think it's to, if you want to do something, there's always a way to make it happen. Even trust, you know, it was post like the heyday of lockdown, but it was still like during the pandemic, like shoots were just starting to come back. Like productions were just kind of starting to pick back up. And, you know, Jen and I had many conversations about like, you know, well, not many conversations, one conversation about like, do we wait until the pandemic is over? And then we were like, well, who knows how long, you know, it's probably here to stay for a while. So let's not wait. Let's just, yes, it will cost more in the sense that some more budget than we would like goes towards testing and the protocols, you know, to meet like CDC guidelines and all that stuff. But it's like, if we wait, we might never make this movie. And if we want to make it badly enough, which we did, we're like, we'll figure out a way to make it happen. So I think the biggest lesson is like, if there's a will, there's a way. You know, don't wait for it. Just kind of figure out how to make it happen.
Love that. Jennifer, I'm going to ask you the same question, and then I'm going to add a little bit there. What was the biggest lesson you had coming out of lockdown? But also, what's the biggest script change that happened like during lockdown between Trust, as far as getting it to where it was to where it is now?
Great question. I would say, so we shot in my parents' house, and my dad is a former doctor who retired at, you know, at the start of COVID. And my parents were neurotic. Like when I would visit them, I would stand in their backyard on an opposite side of the pool, and my dad would be on the other side of the pool, and he's losing his hearing. And I would be like, why am I here? I can't even, like, we can't even speak right now because we're on opposite ends of the pool. This is pointless. So the first time that I actually hugged my parents from the start of COVID, was the day that we came to load into their house, and we'd all been tested, and they were leaving to give us the opportunity to shoot in their house. So that was kind of an interesting, like, after, I don't know, 9 months of not being anywhere near them, to be like, hi, good to see you, bye, we're shooting in your house, was interesting. I would say, like, the biggest script changes would be, I think there were more characters, like more side characters. Obviously there are a lot of like family members and people coming and going. There's a funeral scene, and I had to limit some characters, knowing that every single character, every single actor we bring in needs to be tested. There's a risk of them giving somebody COVID. There was a zone system that we had where, in my mind, I'm thinking the actors are zone A, then we have crew people who are zone B, and then technically anyone we come into contact with or live with is zone C. So if I have some side character who lives with a roommate, now we have many more additional people of exposure. So I had to consider those changes in the script. And fortunately, knock on wood, nobody got COVID during the shoot. But I would say that was the biggest change, and which wasn't too major. But we were changing the script, little tweaks here and there, up until like the day of shooting. As long as scenes were in place, words were being changed day of.
Okay. Following up on that, you said that you felt like Almog, you felt comfortable like from jump, like, this is our director, he's got this, I know I can relinquish control. Is it harder to go ahead and kind of creatively push back with someone that you're such friends with, like, as far as criticism, or does that make it easier? I'll ask you first, Jennifer.
Yeah, I honestly think it was easier. I don't want to be too precious with anything I make. I had like one thing that I said had to stay in the script or not be in the script, which is a love story. I had some script readers tell me to add a love story, and I was like, but this is not that. I don't want a love story in here. That was the one thing I was married to. But in terms of bringing Almog on, I think from the get-go, we had a lot of conversations about even costumes. I remember I had a certain vision, Almog had a different vision, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna trust you, we'll go with that. But it didn't feel like there were ever any moments of like me having to butt heads or really defend myself. It was like easy to communicate. I think at the end of the day, it depends on all creative parties having their having flexibility. Like, obviously we're each going to have a couple things that we're like gung-ho about and passionate about, but I've seen Almog's work, I've worked with him on shorter projects in the past, and so I, in bringing him on, knew how he worked, and I trusted his directing abilities and his he's extremely talented. I also have told Almog this. I was like, oh, he's way out of my talent league. I don't know if he's gonna want to work with me on this. So when he was like, oh, I want to work with you, I was like, no way, this is great, I can't believe he wants to work on my crazy. So yeah, I think there needs to be a
Oh,
little
Jen.
mutual respect, you know? So
Agreed.
I feel very respected by Almog. I would hope he feels the same by me. So it's easy to communicate with someone when there's that level of respect.
Well said, Almog. I'll ask you the same question.
Ditto to all things that were said. No, but I mean, just like Jen said, I think there needs to be this like trust, not to use the title of the film,
Nice.
but there just needs to be this trust. Any performance, obviously, at the end of the day, like Jen wrote the script, right? So it's like she has a very clear idea of what this film should be, which sometimes can be, sometimes with writers, maybe that's more of a challenge, because if the writer has such a specific idea and the director comes in with something that doesn't mesh with every aspect, that could be a challenge. But Jen, I have to say, is like very good at like, here's the core. Like she comes in with the script and the core and the concept and the characters, and then she's extremely open to changes when they make sense for the film, right? So it's like every time I came in with something that was maybe a little different than scripted, and even in developing the script together, it was just like Jen has always been very open to ideas. And I think that only comes with trust, like me trusting, her vision for the script and her trusting me and my directing and my vision for the script. That trust comes with like years of working together beforehand. So I think it's just that openness, and at the end of the day, every performance is a collaboration, right? Between
Yes.
an actor and a director. Both artists come with ideas, and in an ideal world, well, actually, I wouldn't even say in an ideal world they mesh perfectly. In an ideal world, they don't, and then there's a conversation about it. And then you arrive at the best idea, that is a combination of both of those approaches, right? So I think having the ability to have those conversations openly comes with that trust.
Well said. So Jennifer, I'm going to throw it back to you here. So by the time I upload this, people will have seen it, heard my review. So I'm going to get a little spoilery. Was there any, how do I put this? When you originally set to expand this short into a full film, was there a certain message that you wanted the audience to take away? Because full disclosure, once I got to the end of the movie, I was like really sitting here thinking on it and like meditating on it. And I was like, I feel like the message is that there is, or one of the messages you could take away is that there's strength in being able to walk away and knowing what your worth is, like family members or not. Because while I was watching the movie, I kept going, man, I completely agree with, I just kept agreeing with Kate just over and over. And I was like, is the movie trying to get me to not agree with her? But then I just kept watching. I was like, went, no, she's right. Her family kind of sucks. And by the time I got to the end with something that the dad does that made me flip my shit, I was like, wow, I hate him more now, and I actually like her more. Like, was there something that going into it you were like, I kind of want to land here, or?
I feel like we live in this weird time where people want to categorize everything as good or bad. And so, one of the things I really wanted to show is like, even in writing this feature, I think I was judging some of the characters as being all good and all bad. And I realized that people are really nuanced and some good people do bad things and bad people do good things. And I wanted to show, like, even with the dad, the family loves him. They don't really know about some of the details that his kids know. And so I wanted to show that dichotomy that some people are going to hate all of these characters, including mine. Some people will find little glimmers in each of them, but at the end of the day, these people are not meant to be in the same room. And I think from a young age, I've always been taught to make things work, whether it's family, relationships, friends, and like, I'm still to this day fighting that type of thing where people are like, well, can't you reconcile? Can't you have another conversation? Can't you? And I'm a big fan of now saying to people, that you can't have a conversation with people who are committed to misunderstanding you, and that there's a power in removing yourself and walking away from and being the villain in someone else's story. At the end of the day, like, maybe Kate's the villain in Trini's story, or I think in this environment, sometimes that's the message I was hoping that people would leave with, that like, at the end of the day, prioritize you, that it's never too late to walk away from any relationship, family or otherwise. Obviously, it's circumstantial in cases, but I see too many films and too many messages that promote reconciliation, and that's been personally harmful to me. So I wanted to see something that says, like, you're empowered in leaving.
It's funny. I was having this conversation about, who was I talking to? I was talking to a friend, and we were talking about things that we maybe grew up watching and have gone back and watched and been like, ugh. And I was talking about how I was watching a certain sitcom. And to your point, I feel like media pushes that, well, so what if they did this? Like, you still need to figure it out. And it's like, sometimes to your point, you need to just cut bait and go, like, for my mental health, this, like, I can't be, you know, love someone from a distance, as the term goes. And I really love, like, as Kate kind of goes through everything, there's this one particular moment at the funeral involving singing that I was just Facebooking at. And I, can you talk to me about that scene? And was that something that was in the short? Because that moment in particular, just.
That was inspired by my life. I won't go into too much detail, but forever ago, there was a funeral and it was like a circus. And my childhood best friend was there, and someone got up and sang in the middle. People were shouting across the funeral. I went up to the rabbi at the end and apologized to that I was related to these freaks. And apparently, I don't remember this, but I turned to my best friend and I went, oh my gosh, this literally is a movie. Like, I'm so embarrassed. And I wanted to, honestly, the actual reality of what happened was significantly worse. But when I showed Almog my initial script and a lot of other people, they were like, this is unbelievable. And this is like crazy. These characters are acting insane. They feel like characters. So we toned it down a lot so that you can still sense the humanity. Like, it's obviously, there are some extreme circumstances, but these people feel real, and that was important.
Okay. Almog, there's one shot I wanted to ask you about in particular, because I love this shot. There's a shot where Josh is talking to Kate near the end of the movie, and like, Kate's by her car, like on the sidewalk, and Josh is like maybe 4 feet away from her, and there's a tree in between them. Now, was that an intentional visual cue to go ahead and represent a literal divide between the two of them? Because if so, that's fucking brilliant. Because I saw that, I was like, huh, okay, this feels intentional. Or was that like a happy accident? I
everything is intentional. Just kidding. We did not plant the tree there. You know, it's interesting you say that, because I mean, the intention with that shot, to be entirely honest with you, I don't think I ever noticed the tree. Now I'll go back and look at this tree. But the intention behind the shot, intention you got from it, was there. And like, it's very much like this, the two of them standing facing each other, and it's like split down the middle, right?
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be very much like he's still in that same scene, you know, where she's about to leave. Another thing that I talked to with Stan, our director of photography, who is incredibly talented, and I love working with him. We had this idea, I think, when we set up the shot for Heston, who plays Josh, that if you look on his shot, he's like framed by the house. Like,
yeah.
He's almost like, almost the house as a cage, which Damien talks about, the dad, earlier in the film. It's like, we wanted to have that idea play through in the framing of Josh, and the reason why Josh ultimately like stays behind, he's trying to keep the family together. He's still like tethered to the house and the family, Whereas Kate's, you know, like she's facing more toward the street, like she's about to like leave and free herself, right? So I think in that two shot you're talking about, like Josh is on the side of the house, he's trapped with the house, and then Kate is on the side of the street, she's about to be free. And then we also like had that theme play through in their coverage, each of their shots.
Yeah, I love that. I will ask you, since you are the director, what was the hardest, what was the biggest challenge directing this film?
You know, what a great question. I think this was, I think, the biggest cast of, not I think, it was the biggest cast of a film that I've directed. You know, part of it is because it's my first feature, so obviously you're going to have more characters in a feature film, but there were a lot of scenes with a lot of cast. You know, there's like the extended family, there's the funeral scene, so it's I think the biggest challenge, and actually like the most fun, really, once you get into it, even though it's a bit of a headache, it's juggling all these different characters and performances that like play with each other, whether that's in the funeral. We had this very like long take. It's a 6.5 minute take in the funeral home,
Love that
after the
shot.
funeral.
Yes.
And that was the most challenging to coordinate, just logistically. We had practically every actor that's in the movie in that shot, and we had one day to get it. We did not have a rehearsal day ahead of time, so it was like half a day of rehearsing, half a day of filming. That was a very intricate shot, which was, you know, it's funny. I found myself in prep, like I had figured out the shot list for like everything else, and I almost always put that shot like off because it was like, oh my God, I don't even know where to start with this. So I kept like not thinking about it until like
Just
2 weeks
put
before we shot. And then I was like, all right, I need to like start thinking about it because we can't just figure it out on the day. We have to figure it out beforehand and then make adjustments. So that was like the biggest like mind hurdle, you know, but it was so like once we got into it, it was so much fun, you know.
right. Yeah, I love the way that shot was shot because it's almost like you feel the walls co closing in on Kate, like the more that scene goes on. Jennifer, to throw it back to you, as a writer, one thing that I always find myself really kind of struggling with and kind of fighting myself on is like how I can visually represent the person that I'm writing for. When it came to casting everyone, like, how hard was that as far as going like, okay, this is how I, you know, this is how I picture them on the script. This is the visual representation of them, and knowing that you nailed that.
In terms of casting, I was very actively involved. I had a lot of people trying to pressure me to change the three main cast because obviously I cast myself and two people who were in the short and were relatively unknown. So I was getting a lot of feedback to cast name actors in those roles, and I said no. I wrote those roles with them in mind, and I'm glad that I stuck to my guns. I think they did a phenomenal job. And then in terms of the rest of the cast, I initially wrote Damien as, I think even in the script I said something like snot dripping down his face. He's like wiping his face, like as just absolute like disgust in human form. And then the feedback I got was like, that's a little bit on the nose. What if he's charming and likable and like a good looking dude? And so stuff like that, I was open to that feedback, and I think Lyndon crushed it. It makes sense to go in that direction. One of the aunts I knew from doing theater forever ago, so I insisted on casting her. So I had certain people in mind for certain roles, and then beyond those set people, we sort of sat down, Almog and I, with the casting director and came up with some lists as to like dream actors for each role that we could reach out to. And then our casting person would throw in some random people that we wouldn't have even thought that are totally off type. And sometimes they were the best choice for the role. Other times I stuck to my guns. But I knew with the five main family, I wanted it to feel suffocating and chaotic. And I think we nailed it on that front.
Agreed. So actually, to throw it back on that, was there any hesitation to cast yourself? Like,
You know, I am my own worst critic, and I think I probably put a little too much on my plate in terms of like we would yell cut, Alma would yell cut, and I'm signing a check, making a phone call, so it's hard to go like from actor to producer to like it's a lot to take on. But no, actually, in the past, it's funny. I was talking to my mom about this day how I had an ex who used to be like, you need to stop writing things for yourself, like write good stories. And on our festival circuit, everyone has been like, it's so smart that you've been writing things for yourself. And that's sort of
yeah.
the reason I segued into writing is I come from an acting background. It's hard to get your foot in the door. And no, I was insistent on putting myself in this, and I'm glad I did, even though I have trouble watching the screenings now because of me.
Oh, do you? You're one of those. You
It's the
can't.
one scene. No,
I
there's like
always have
it's
to go
funny
to that.
every time we screen the film, and I don't know
Yeah.
why, because I think it's a great scene, and I think Jen crushed it. But because she's, I guess, her own worst critic, every time the scene comes on, she has to go to the bathroom. I'm like, no, you don't. I know what you're doing because it's this. You have to go to the bathroom at every, the same spot every time we screen the movie.
Wait,
It's so funny.
what scene is that?
The
That.
shower scene. Although now I just like sit in the lobby during the screenings because I'm like I'm too involved. I don't even know if this film is in English anymore. I don't know what's happening. I can't. But I am
Whereas
proud of it.
I'm the complete opposite. Like I love watching it in a theater full of I also edited the film, so I've seen it literally more than anyone. But I, when you're editing it and you're in the room by yourself, you have no idea how to feel about anything anymore. And when you're in a room and people are laughing when they're supposed to, you hear crying when they're supposed to, you're like, okay, this works. It's A, like affirming, but B, it's a cool way to experience it as a viewer, just as a member of the audience. Like it's nice to like sit back and not be, well, I, trying not to be too critical, but just enjoy the film as a viewer. And that can only happen with an audience. So every time we screen into an audience, like I'm there, I love it.
I'm right there with you. Like I hate like editing my podcast is my least favorite thing because I have to hear my voice and it's just like, oh God, like I hate it so much. It makes me cringe whenever I do it. So I completely understand. Jennifer, writing wise, was there anything that was left on the cutting room floor that you really wanted to kind of get in the movie and like weren't able to or?
No, not really. I think there were certain things in the funeral that I initially was a little bummed about removing. Certain things that emulated the actual funeral that inspired the funeral scene, but I'm big on telling the best story, and I think that was the biggest challenge for me is like what aspects of my lived experience am I married to versus telling the best story? And at a certain point, I just think telling the best story is mo most important. And I don't think there was anything that needed to be included that wasn't already included.
Almog, I'll ask you, considering your background and everything and this being your first feature, I know you talked about some of the challenges. Like, was there a moment directing this that you kind of went, oh, now I got it? Because like I would feel like you guys get into a rhythm at a certain point, you go, okay, now we're cooking. Like, was there a certain moment where you went, okay, like I got this or?
What a great question. I think it was like 3 quarters into day one.
Specific, okay.
Like, 'cause day one's always like one big question mark. Like you can prep all you want, and then when you're there to film on the first day, it's like, okay, cool, we're doing this. Like what we are filming right now will be in the film, and the performances we're capturing, that like sets the tone for the rest. And also it's like the first time that the cast and the crew are working together, right? Everyone working together. So it's kind of this train that you hope will be moving at a good pace. And then it's always a little slow. The beginning of every day is a little slower than you'd like, but day one is always like everyone's getting in the groove. And I think like a couple hours into day one, I was like probably internally freaking out a little bit. I was like, we should be at this, we should be here by now, but we're here. And like, is this gonna work? And like, you have this idea in your mind, you're like, we're not capturing exactly my idea, whatever. But then once everyone gets in the groove, it's great. And then, by day two, like it's like, cool, we did a day. Now we just like emulate that. Obviously every day is very different, but it's like we were able to do it once. Now we just need to repeat it 17 more times.
So yeah, how long did you guys shoot?
We had 18 shoot days over 3.5 weeks. So it was 3 weeks with obviously weekends off, and then half of a fourth week.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Jennifer, I've got kind of a complicated one for you. So what was the hardest scene to shoot as an actor, and what was the hardest scene as the writer?
As an actor, I think day one was hard just to get in the rhythm of things, and also Almog likes to do a lot of takes, and
Yeah, I do.
it's great. It gives you room to play. But at first, my first thought after the first few takes was, oh, it's because I suck and I am terrible. And why did I put myself in this? But then after a few days, I was like, oh, he just does a lot of takes. It's not because I'm the worst in the world. So got over that. But then I would say the running into the ocean was a challenge because one, I'm afraid of the ocean. And it was freezing, and you have to really be in the moment and turn it on and like get to this emotional climax. That was challenging. And then from a writing perspective, I'd say the
I
10
know exactly which one. Oh,
the
never
one.
mind.
Oh,
No.
I'm curious what you were gonna say.
Yeah, actually, I'm curious. Yeah, what you
But
got?
Well,
the oneer for me, like I wrote it as a oneer, but it obviously is a challenge to have all the crew hit their marks, all the actors hit their marks, and I think we did 17 takes of that scene,
oh,
and I was
geez.
just like, gosh, I really hope this works. Like, there were a couple times where like one person would miss a mark and then you'd have to reset, so it was definitely a challenge, but in my mind, I was like, there's no other way to feel the chaos of being at a funeral when, like, you're there to honor this person, but then someone's talking about a game that's on TV, someone else talking about, like, there's so much going on and it feels like overwhelming and suffocating. And I didn't think it was possible to do it without that oneer. But Almog, I'd love to know what you thought I was going to say.
Well, I would thought you were going to say the first family
I
scene,
mean, that was also in the back of my head.
because I feel like, that was according to Jen, her favorite written scene, her favorite scene in the script that she wrote. And then
Really? Okay.
when we were, it's like that first scene when the extended family is in, it's kind of that chaotic, everyone's trying to be helpful and coordinate where to go to lunch and that whole thing. So that was Jen's favorite written scene. And when we were filming it was actually the first day that the actors of the extended family arrived. So it was just like a lot more bodies in the room, a lot more back and forth. And I think we all felt it, that it was not exactly the version that we had imagined it felt like. Even I think that they took a toll. It was emotionally draining for everyone. And I can see a little bit on Jen's face, because she's, it kind of worked for the scene because Kate needed to be emotionally drained. But I can't, I think everyone on set felt a little bit of this, like, oh, this scene is a lot. And then it worked for the film, and Jen is, we're both very happy with how it came out, like in the edit. But I think on the day, it was definitely emotionally draining, and we were all kind of wondering, will this scene work? Like, when we in post, will it come out the way we hoped it would?
Is there Jennifer, I'll ask you first. Was there a scene? So I think one thing I love about how you acted, by the way, I think you killed it in that
Oh, thanks.
department, especially so many of your visual expressions tell a story. Like my favorite, like once the singing happens at the funeral, I think it's like the 20 minute 37 second mark, I believe. You have this look on your
Very
face.
specific.
I take a lot of notes, man.
That's great.
But you have this look on your face, like you could, like if you had laser eyes, you would zap everyone there. And I remember I actually had to pause because I was laughing really hard. But like that level of irritation of being able to convey that in just a visual cue is something I really like. I was very impressed by, and
Oh, great.
I think that at several points, whether it's you going to get your wine and rosin that's not there, I think so many of your expressions tell almost like these little mini stories within the film. Kind of talk to me about that. Like that was like a conscious decision, because I think by the end of the movie where Kate ends up, you almost see her just kind of like almost exhale, because I feel like you're like Kate's like a ticking clock throughout the whole film, and she has these like little moments where she almost gets a little bit out, but then she has to kind of go back into like camo mode almost to try and just function. So yeah, kind of talk to me like about that.
Yeah, I think so much of acting is what's unsaid. And I think a lot of actors, when you take a script, you're like so focused on the dialogue. And I think that the most important beats are when you're listening and reacting to people. I think I also naturally have reactions when I don't think I'm reacting in my own life. Like Almog will be like, "Jennifer, you look disgusted." I'm like, "No, I don't." And then I'm looking at myself. I'm like, "Oh my God, I like can't
I
hide."
will never say Jennifer.
But you know, I think that for Kate, there's a lot of like it's like these subtle reactions of where you know you just see a glimmer in her eye of like, "I can't believe these people." Until she finally realizes to prioritize herself, and that's when there's the sigh of relief. But it almost feels like, you know, she gets home and she thought she could trust her brother. Then she realizes that he's not on her team necessarily. He's trying to mend everything. So I think there's a lot that she wants to say, but doesn't feel like she can say it to anyone. And if you're paying attention, you could see that on her face. And there's a lot that's like unsaid through her expressions. And if a family member were to like even just talking to Aunt Paula when Aunt Paula's like, "We have each other," and Kate's like, It's
Yeah.
like she doesn't even need to say it. You can tell that she does not agree, but I don't think she feels safe to say what's on her mind. So she says it with her face.
You have one scene, and I think from a writing perspective, it's maybe my favorite scene. It's where Josh goes off on Mark, and I won't give anything more than that. But that scene in particular, I was like, whoa. Like it felt like one, like I actually remember actually rewound the scene, because I think that I just love that scene so much. Talk to me about writing that scene in particular, because that feels like one of the more emotionally charged moments in the film. So Almog, I'll ask you in a second about directing that, but Jennifer, from a writing perspective, talk to me about that scene.
Yeah, so that was actually a later addition into the script, but I've lost family to suicide, and I've seen a lot of films that kind of haphazardly throw a suicide into, like even on TV all the time, I'm seeing content where it's just like a little bit in a script, and I wanted to show the impact of this on Josh and how people are not necessarily cognizant of the way in which this affects a person. Like even in my own life, I remember when I lost someone to suicide, my mom called the head of my high school. And at the end of the week, the head of my high school made some comment to my mom about like, "Oh, well, Jennifer's not doing well. She's not over it yet. Like, why isn't she over it yet?" Or something along those lines, which is just so insulting and shocking. But there is this expectation of like, "Oh, I'm sorry that this happened," but the next day, like life keeps going on and you're expected to heal. And so I wanted to show that. I also wanted to show we don't really know the mom other than what we hear through the family. We know she helped create this business, and it's this weird dichotomy where like we kind of make it apparent that she was struggling enough to not be doing her job well. But at the same time, it's for a child of someone who's struggling, it's like, how do you vouch for this person? And I thought it was important to put that in there to help destigmatize any sort of mental health issues and show how much of an effect this has on the family.
So to piggyback off of that, I think you make a insanely bold decision as far as what caused that. Like I said, people, you should have listened to the review by now. So I will just kind of spoil and say that it was an affair. I won't get into the very ickness behind it, but that decision in particular, I thought was incredibly brave and pretty shocking, honestly, because it's like, oh, an affair, that's not great. And then it's like, oh, fuck, that's much worse than I pictured, because, you know, Damien is vile for that. Kind of talk to me about that decision from a writing perspective. Was that in the short?
No, it wasn't in the short. In the feature, it was, and this is not in any of the script, but Almog and I talked about sort of the backstory of all this, and we created this whole backstory that mom was going through her mental health struggles, and probably like how Damien would justify this decision is Damien probably was trying to help mom. Mom was pushing him away. Like the impact of her mental health struggles on the family, and he acted out by doing this awful thing. I mean, that's sort of the backstory we talked to Lyndon about, to try and make him come at this character with less judgment so that there's some glimmer of hope. At the same time, I kind of wanted to show Amber being a victim of the father, just sort of the domino effect of the actions and how it can sort of degrade an entire room of people, how one person's actions can affect multiple people, and how maybe mom, we don't really delve into it, but maybe mom wasn't getting the help that she necessarily needed. And now Damien has to live with the regret of his choices, and I think he's also now at a point where he's trying to maybe make himself the victim of a situation that he's not the victim of. So there's a lot of different layers to it. And I wanted to sort of delve into that. And I think for their marriage, the final straw was that affair.
I want to say, I want to shout you out again from a writing perspective, because I was going back and forth with that in my head. Cause I'm like, oh, what they did was so messed up. But then again, they were like a kid, but also like, this is your friend. How can you, like, I kept going in the circle thinking about it, and I was actually almost mad at you, because I'm like, why are you making me think about this so much? But
that was the goal. I wanted to, you know, I think that's the thing, is like, my character hated her friend for a long time, and I think that part of the film is like forgiving, but also keeping the door closed. That's a big message I wanted to leave people, is like, I also hear all the time, like, forgive and forget, and I'm a big fan of forgiving yourself for tolerating certain things. And like, I don't think people deserve forgiveness unless they've earned it. I think you can forgive yourself for tolerating certain behaviors and disrespect, but unless there's a genuine apology, I don't think it's warranted. And I think even when there is, in the case of Amber, it's okay to forgive and also be like, I forgive you. I understand how difficult this situation was, and move on and don't bring me in your life. I think that's an important message.
I love that you did that from the perspective of Kate just telling Josh, like, you know, it's okay for you. Like, I love that that's one of the last things that she says. So I was like, because writing wise, I really was kind of sitting here going, okay, that's pretty unforgivable. I really hope Kate doesn't just walk this back. And when she didn't, I was like, oh, extra brownie point. Thank you so much for not doing that. Because I think lesser writers would walk that back. And so all the credit in the world for you for sticking by that, because that made me like the film more. Almog, I am going to ask you, I've got a couple more questions here. Filming that scene in Kate's friend's room, I think that's one of the best, I think that's one of the best shot films in the whole movie. And I love that Kate gets that moment to finish what she was saying at the funeral before she was rudely interrupted. Kind of talk to me about that, but then also I wanted to ask you about how the opening sequence where Kate's walking to her classes and she gets that initial phone call and the way that you guys play with the sound. Is that supposed to represent Kate like having a panic attack? Because that happens like 4 or 5 times throughout the film. So kind of talk to me about that initial bedroom scene and then kind of about the that other sequences there, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, so I mean, at the beginning, the very first scene, that was something that Jen and I talked a lot about, and just the script stage is we both felt it was important to have to see what Kate's life is like before the call, right? Before she finds out that her mom died, because then she's kind of sucked back into the family, right? Something she's been avoiding for a while, and now she's sucked back into it. She has no choice. So having that scene where she's doing well, she's in school, she's a go-getter, kind of on the up and up. And then when she gets the call, it was very much we shot it both ways, but I kind of knew the it you know in the edit, it's like she gets the call, and then we linger like in the on the back of her head, and we don't see her expression. And that was a very conscious decision because easily we could have, been on her face and see her start to get this like panic attack and cut from there. But I thought it's more interesting to, have us imagine it, but then also to kind of build up to the big like panic attack that kind of comes later on. Like we don't want to see it now, but we can allude to it and assume how she might react to getting such a call, but we don't see it quite yet. So that scene was very important to kind of set that stage, but I very consciously wanted to like linger on the back of her head so we don't fully see how she's reacting to it, because there's also a lot going on there, right? It's like maybe this is a call she was fearing that might come for a while. Because there's all these emotions in there, I almost wanted to just see the back of her head, and then we unfold all this emotional journey with the as the film progresses.
Yeah, I really thought like kind of I thought that was a great decision, not showing the ramifications immediately of the panic attack and kind of just giving you little almost like bite-sized glimpses into Kate's psyche as the film went on. I think from a directorial perspective and a writing perspective, that was incredibly well handled. Couple more questions for y'all. Jennifer, I'll start with you, with Trini. She as a character, oh my gosh, she was so infuriating to me. But there's like one or two moments where I was like, oh, I feel a twinge of sympathy for her. Like not a ton, because I think she's terrible, but I felt a little sympathy for her. Was she the hardest character for you to write for this film or?
Definitely. We really toned her down quite a bit because we wanted to have characters that had humanity, that had moments of hopefulness and glimmers of hope. And I think I initially wrote her pretty one-dimensionally, and so we had to sort of build in the layers to her. And I think she does have some redeemable moments, and it makes it so the audience does sympathize with her at times. So that was important to show. Because also, just in life, I think I mentioned this before, but I think people are layered and not all good or all bad. And I wanted to show how sometimes you have the perfect concoction of people who shouldn't be in the same room. And I think
Yes.
that is reflected here, that maybe in a different environment, she wouldn't be acting this way. I think in certain isolated moments, we see her humanity shine through. So I wanted the audience to feel conflicted about her in those moments.
Okay.
I think piggybacking off that,
Yeah,
like I
please.
think based off the conversations, that Jen and I had about really maybe pulling it back with Trini to make her with both Trini and Damien to make him a little more just so we can sympathize or empathize with them a little more, because then they like they are people, even though they are wrong 95% of the time. We want to like feel that they're real people, but also more from like a structure, like plot structure perspective. You know, that was something that was very important to me, and in conversations with Jen, like having that scene between the sisters where they connect and you think, huh, maybe this family will make it work, and a part of you is not sure how to feel about it because you're like, they shouldn't, but maybe that'll be nice, but maybe not. So it's like to have that empathy and that humanity makes you believe there will be some sort of resolution for this family, and then to like take that away at the end, you know. So that was like, it was important for us to like build that arc of like, okay, maybe this will be that type of film where they make it all work by the end. So it's important to build that possibility so that it's satisfying when it's not the ending.
Jennifer, I will ask you, speaking of the ending, was there ever a point where the ending was different? Like, did you write the ending first and then you wrote backwards? Or, like, how did you kind of attack the script?
That's actually one of the two things that I said. So no love story, and the ending was always going to be that. I've had people who pressured me otherwise. We even had someone at a festival who was upset by the ending, but I appreciated that reaction because I think that I want people to leave thinking and considering the ending. And I know for some people it's upsetting that the family isn't making it work, that she's not trying to make it work. But for me, I thought that was the only hopeful ending, that staying in it. I mean, even just I reflecting on the messages I could have used in my past, I'm like, man, if I had had messages that said you can leave, you should leave, you don't need to try and make this work, I think I would have been out of some unhealthy situations for myself a lot sooner. So that's kind of, I wanted to leave people with that message, and some people might not love that. But I think it's important, especially when so much media pushes reconciliation. I don't think that's healthy. I'm a big fan of knowing when it's your time to walk away.
I personally love the ending. It's actually the most hopeful ending I think this film could have. So hearing that people like I find that kind of baffling, to be honest. Like, because I love the fact that as Kate is driving away, that's the first unironic like laugh or smile she's had all film. And I was like, oh, okay. Like good. This is great. Last question I have for both of y'all, just because I found it creatively interesting. Was there the closest look we get of the mom is really the when Kate is watching like the home videos with her, and they're going through her old photos and all that. Was it a conscious decision early on to not do any flashbacks or anything like that with the mom? Like, it was that as close as you wanted to get to a flashback? Like,
Yeah, so for me, and actually my actual mom was the mom whose photos we used, and
oh, love that.
my dad was an extra, so he was like, this is so weird to be seeing my wife, at a funeral. Not the best vibes here. But for me, it wasn't her story. It was the story of how how, like, I think how much love her family had for her, and the impact of this death on the family was more the focus. And like, I think even for Kate, she feels guilty that eventually, like, it's implied that mom wasn't doing so well, but she went and left and went to college. So I think there's guilt in that choice. But I felt like the story was more about Kate's character and her grieving process and how she can hold space to love and mourn her mom, even though she's so mad at her mom for making this decision. So I wanted to really focus on the impact of the death versus like the mom's lived experience, if that makes sense.
That does. No, that really does. Almog, I'm throw it back to you here. Filming that scene in particular, I would say, oh, it's probably that scene. That's one of the most emotionally charged scenes in the film. And I feel like that's kind of almost like the powder keg moment where everything just kind of boils over. Talk to me about filming that tension. I think you do a great job of just kind of ramping it up like a little bit as each person has their dialogue. Kind of talk to me about directing that scene.
And the scene we're talking about is the home video scene, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that was very obviously pivotal scene. It's like a turning point. There's secrets revealed, and it's a big moment for these three siblings. It was a very fun, challenging film to shoot, especially because we were confined to like that one room. But it was really fun figuring it out. Again, as Jen mentioned, I like to take takes, not for the sake of taking takes, but because I think we're figuring it out. Obviously, you do a lot of it in rehearsal, and that's great and that's important. But then on the day, there's still an element of figuring it out. And I think for that scene specifically, there was a lot of that figuring it out. Like as we were filming, with every take, it became a little clearer what the intention is, like with every line. And I think a lot of things that were like that I loved playing with was the secrecy, right? So there's like between Josh and Trini, and what Trini was doing with the ashes, and the fact that Josh knew about it, and these kind of looks they're giving each other to like
Great
not here,
reveal,
not
but
now.
great reveal, by the way. Oh, that made me so mad. But
So it was very much like, that scene is like you don't realize what everything has been leading to until the scene, until things are revealed. So there was that powder keg moment. But then another emotional crux of that scene for me was like, because it's really the first time we see mom in a not in a photo, but in a home video, in a memory. She is alive in this moment on TV, right? So it's like a very emotional moment because we as the audience, all we know of her is this photo, right, from the funeral. And now we get a glimpse into everything these kids remember. And it's like, oh, now we understand all the emotionality that went into every scene up to this point. Like, when we maybe understand Trini a little more, we understand Kate a little more, we understand Josh a little more. So it was just an important moment as an emotional kind of climax. And obviously that scene leads to Kate's big emotional climax. So it was a very important moment from all these different like respects.
yeah, which I think you both nail from all your perspectives. Last question I have for both of you. Almog, I'll start with you. What is the biggest takeaway from this whole experience of directing this film? What is your biggest takeaway? What's your biggest lesson learned, if you want to phrase it like that you're going to take from this film onto your next project?
Another good question. I think two things. One is like work with people who you trust and ideally know personally, but if you don't know, then someone can vouch for the person, that you're working with, whether it's cast or crew. Because again, like I said, it's very important to have that trust in each other. And then the other, it's a little maybe like simple to say, but because it was my first feature film, there's always that little tiny bit of like anxiety going into it. It's like, this is a feature. This is the long game. This is a marathon. It's not like a 4-day short film shoot. It's like an 18-day feature film. And now that I have done it, it's like I know it's possible. So what feels maybe like this impossible task, if you split it into little tasks, like each day is its own little bubble, and within each day, every scene is it's like if you break down a feature into little pods, then it's possible. And when I I was able to start thinking of it in that way, and it just made this like intangible thing of a feature film a lot more possible. So that was like my biggest takeaway. It's like now I can go into my next feature film knowing like how to approach it.
Okay. I love that answer. Jennifer, what about you?
I would say showing gratitude and respecting everyone at every stage of the process, from, the biggest actor on set to the PAs. Like, we could not have made this film without every hand on deck. And on our set, everyone seemed very respectful. And I've been on other sets where I can see the hierarchy at play. And I'm a big fan of, the people who work well together, bringing them along on the journey to the next project and coming up together. So you just never know who on a set is going to be doing something else later on. And I like to create a safe, happy working environment. So continuing to do that. And echoing all Mog sentiments, working with people you know and like, and having contracts always in play, because I think contracts maintain friendships.
Well said. Almog, Jennifer, thank you so much for taking part of your day to talk with me. This was horribly enjoyable, and I really enjoyed talking to both of you. Thank you so much. Last thing I will ask y'all before you get out of here, Jennifer, if you please share your where p the people can find you on social media if you have it, and then what projects do you have coming up?
Yeah, you can find me on most socials at Jen Hartz 247. I think I'm the Jennifer Levinson on TikTok. And then I'm working on a bunch of different projects right now. Almog and I are developing a horror feature called Age. I have my own script, How to Hunt a Narcissist, and then a bunch of other projects, one called Cut Purse, and developing another horror about abandoned malls. So very excited for all of the upcoming horror-based projects.
Nice, let's go.
We also have another feature we're collaborating on called Tagged, which
Oh yeah, me too.
is
Oh my God, I
there's
literally
so
can't.
many projects that we can't even keep track. But yeah, the two of us are collaborating with a third writer, and it's based on we recently made a short film for Halloween, just like a horror film. So it's like a feature version of
Okay.
that we also have in the works. And then yeah, I also have a couple other features I'm working on. And hopefully, one or all of them will happen in the next year. Yes.
Oh, any socials they can find you on, Allmog,
Oh
or
yeah, I'm also on most of the socials at allmog.aa.
perfect. And then when should this be out for people to check out?
It's out.
Yeah. It just
So
came out 2 days ago, so it's available on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, I think YouTube TV, right? Yeah. So everywhere you rent or buy movies, it is available.
Perfect. And I will definitely be tagging you both once the interview and the review are live. I already did my review this morning. Spoiler, it's a very good rating. So
Yes.
I will share y'all on that. But
Love it.
Jennifer Almog, seriously, I enjoyed this film so much. I can't wait to see y'all's next collaboration. It's a day one watch for me. Like, I can't wait to see what y'all do next. Again, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And I hope you guys have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank
You
you.
too.
Thank you so much for having us. This was a blast.
Yeah, thank you again for taking the time. You guys take care.
You too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.